This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, this week we're going to have a discussion with another fabulous magician. This past week, I released the one with Rudy Kobe, and it has been very well received and been a very popular download, apparently, throughout the world. A lot of people have not only downloaded that, but also sent a lot of comments on our Facebook page and other places through media, through Instagram and Twitter and elsewhere. And so it's great to see this kind of response, and Rudy has told me that he has received a lot of texts and emails also, and conversations of people who have heard that podcast as well. And so also it kind of led to something else. There was one listener who had said that he was interested in finding out more about David Stone, because he was experiencing some of the same issues that I had mentioned that David had when we were talking back in 2012 in that podcast, and that one with David in which he had mentioned that he has some problems with confidence because of him being turned down in a few places that were high profile. Anyhow, I have to go back and listen to that. I've always said that's one of my top five of all-time podcasts as far as something that had surprised me when we got into the discussion, and I really enjoyed that. You know, another one was with Noel Britton, Armando Lucero was another one, Kevin James. Those are just four of the ones I think are really great. And if you go back and listen to one, I believe I had with Dan Garrett. That was really interesting, too. And to find these podcasts, the best way of trying to do that, of course, is you can go to themagicwordpodcast.com, and there you can go into the archives, go back, and you can kind of dig through and find it. Or the easy thing is there's a search engine also on the main page for the Magic Word, and you just type in whatever name or product or something like that, name of a trick, and it'll pop up and show you where we have discussed that. And so that's perhaps the easiest way to try to do a search and go back and listen to some of these great voices that we've spoken to here in the past, some of the magicians. Well, this a couple of weeks ago, we were also talking about a convention that's going to be coming up, and that's going to be Magic Cuba, which is going to be in Havana, Cuba, November the 7th through the 11th, and they have extended their deadline for the registration to offer a $100 discount off of registration to listeners of the Magic Word. So when you go to magiccuba.org, that's only one C, that's MagicCuba.org, then as you check out, you use the promo code TheMagicWordPodcast, all one word, all lowercase, that with no spaces, then you'll get that $100 discount. Now, I've had a few other people who have told me about their conventions, and I think it's important that we let everyone know about the conventions that are going on. The reason I spent some time a few weeks ago, again, on Magic Cuba was because that is a very unique convention. They never held anything like this in Cuba before. The talent is going to be outstanding. I think it's going to be a one-of-a-kind opportunity. Even if they do this in the future, I don't know how it can possibly be the same, because this is going to be just a very interesting convention. Anyhow, what I've done is gone out and created another page on the Magic Word Podcast called Magic Convention Guide. So if your convention is not listed there, then you can just let me know, and I'll be glad to update that and put the details and a link to your website then as well. So I don't know any place else really in the U.S., at least, where there is a convention guide that's posted online. So I thought, well, I used to do this for Magic Magazine. I may as well do it here on my own podcast. So if you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, along the left side, you'll see a tab over there that will say Magic Convention Guide. Click on that. And if your convention is not listed, again, drop me a note. That's scott@themagicwordpodcast.com. And I'd be glad to add your convention to this as well. Well, this week I have something a little bit different. This is not a sit-down conversation that I have with I'm having with another magician. Richard Turner has long been a friend of mine, and we have had discussions, but never really a microphone in hand, and we've also not had the time in either of our schedules when we can actually sit down and visit. He lives in San Antonio, which is just a few hours away from me here in Houston, and we have talked about getting together when I'm coming to or through San Antonio to visit. but he seems to be traveling a lot, a whole lot. And in fact, he talks about that in this upcoming podcast, how many days in a row that he's been working, and most of them are, of course, outside of the city. But nevertheless, as many of you may know, that he has starred or is starring in a documentary called DEALT, that's D-E-A-L-T, and it is playing really, I don't know if it's select theaters, it's just some individual screenings that they've been going around the country and showing these, and eventually it will be released on a DVD. Perhaps it might be picked up by Netflix. I don't believe that it has been yet. If you go to their website, which is DEALTmovie.com, that's D-E-A-L-T movie, M-O-V-I-E.com, there you'll find information on how that you can buy the movie if you want to watch it online or download it. And I'm sure whenever that the DVD becomes available, that it will be available there as well. So just go to that website and you'll get information on how that you can own the movie and have an opportunity to watch it. Anyhow, they did have a screening here in Houston just in early January, and after the movie was over, we did a Skype call with Richard, and so this way that in the theater, this was sponsored by the local film club in Houston, and about half the audience were film club members, and the other half were magicians and friends, and so we had a pretty good showing, despite the weather. It was very cold and slippery and icy, and some of the bridges were closed and highways, so it was difficult to get there. It wasn't as crowded as what we had hoped it would be, but we still had a good turnout, and after it was over, again, due to travel, that Richard was not able to make it in person, so the next best thing was to have a Skype call. And so he was on the big screen in the movie there, and then I was the one conducting a Q&A with him to talk about the movie and a little bit about what he is doing and where he's been traveling, etc. And then in the audience were several other magicians, and you'll hear some of them mentioned in this as well. So if you haven't had a chance to see DEALT, I highly recommend. Great movie, very interesting, and of course Richard's a very interesting man. Perhaps we might be able to, again, sit down and talk more about him personally and not just about the movie, but there are some things that are shared here in this Q&A that deal with his life. And so please welcome my guest this week, Richard Turner, here on The Magic Word. This is something relatively new, I understand, for the film club here. That is that right, John? We haven't done this kind of thing before. I guess you've had Q&A sometimes with some people from the movie, but not
very
necessarily
early, yes.
A Skype kind of a thing. So this is something a little bit different, where you get to have it live in real time. And hey, Richard, Scott Wells here. Hey, how you doing, buddy?
Buddy.
Good.
Good.
We just got to see your show here, DEALT. For the first time, and just so you kind of have a general idea about how many people are here, everybody kind of say hello or howdy.
Howdy!
Howdy!
There you go, pretty good sized group. We've got also quite a few magicians who have come over here. The guys who are magicians, just say howdy also.
Howdy!
Sounds like about half of the people here as well. And the rest are with the film club, and so we have just a few questions. Again, we really enjoyed the show. It's great to see you. And I guess the weather probably up in San Antonio is just as cold as it is down here in Houston right now.
Yeah, it is cold. It was in the 20s and 30s.
Wow. Now, I understand that you couldn't join us tonight, actually. One of the reasons is that you've been on a tour kind of with this show, with DEALT, and you've been traveling the country. You got back from New York or getting ready to go to New York or England?
Back and forth more than once already.
Okay.
Four times between here and New York,
and then
just
Long,
New York,
and then
as well as San Francisco, L.A., and then states across the country, and San Diego, Austin.
Well, I think what's kind of interesting, too, is that it also has international appeal. Didn't you say that also you're going to be going to England, or you have been already to promote this?
I leave in about a month from right now.
Great, great. Now, I know that, sir, for many of the film buffs over here, I wanted to know a little bit about the documentary aspect of it. And from that standpoint, I noticed this was directed by Luke Corum, and I assume that is Danny Corum's son?
That is true. That's Danny Corum's son.
And for those of you who are magicians, know who Danny Corum is. Hasn't really done a lot necessarily in the magic world, but he is a magician and a mind reader and a mentalist, and is very well known among magicians. But I didn't know his son Luke actually was in film. So how did you get hooked up then with Luke to do this to begin with?
Well, I actually had three different offers to have a feature documentary done on my life, one out of LA, one out of New York, and then Luke and his crew contacted me from Texas. And I asked them for their last film, which was called Ford Montague. It was a very well done film, and I had a friend of mine named Dave McFadden, who was the creator of the TV series Home Improvement with Tim Allen and movies like What Women Want, and I said, check it out, tell me what you think of this guy. And he said, they do good work. And I decided I didn't trust, I hate to put it like this, didn't trust LA, I didn't trust New York, I didn't trust Texas. So I went.
Good man, good man. And so then you went with Luke. So this was I think it showed him as being one of the writers as well.
Yes. Okay. He's a very talented young man. I call the whole crew the young guns. You know, all these kids today are doing all this really wonderful stuff.
Sure.
I'm old enough to be their father. In fact, I'm this father's age. What am I talking about?
Right.
Captain Corp and I are only a year apart from each other.
I had a question also just kind of about the cards that you go through a day. I noticed that at one point you had the deck of cards and you kind of were taking the edges of them on your drawer. You pull the drawer out of the of your table. I haven't seen anybody do that before. What does that do for the cards?
Well, when the cards go through the punch, if the punch isn't really sharp, it can leave a little residue on the edge of the cards. I'd like my cards to feel real smooth, like a baby's butt. So you just lightly rub the edges, and it takes that little rough edge off.
I think it's interesting also, as far as the cards go, and that you have, they say, tens of thousands of cards, I guess, in your house, as you were explaining here in the documentary. And you also have your own cards that were made that were a special kind also because of the way they were stamped. Can you explain a little bit about that? It might be a little bit too much detail, but can you explain that to everybody?
Well, yeah. First, I exposed a U.S. playing card company in 1988 for subcontracting their paper. And then in 1993, they started cutting their cards upside down. They were not traditionally cut. The blade goes to the face like they did for 100 years. And I called them on it, and the dealers in the casinos were all upset because they couldn't tell what was wrong, but they could tell they were not user-friendly. Anyway, I'm the one that identified the problem for them, and what that means is when a deck of cards is cut, the blade goes through the face of the card, which puts the rounded edge on the face, sharp edge on the back. If you do any kind of a shuffle, you always start from the bottom up. If you try to shuffle a non-traditionally cut deck face down, they bind up. But then if you turn them face up and they shuffle smooth, then you know you have a non-traditionally cut deck. And so they reversed it for the casinos. That's the way they did it for 100 years. But they didn't do it for the general public. But now so many people are aware of it because of my telling that U.S. companies have taken more of their cards traditionally cut. But yeah, I did make a half a million decks properly cut for the, you know, so the magicians would have a good quality cards.
I've got a few bricks of that myself. And what's the gold seal? What are they called?
It's gold seal, yeah. Gold seal pricing.
Yeah, yeah. I know there are different kinds of card decks that are out there. On Kickstarter has a lot of different cards that are being released, it seems like, all the time.
And most of those people don't know. They say, oh, these are the best. They don't know what goes into making a deck of cards. I've been on staff for 20 years there, and there are so many elements to making a card. They don't even know. They wouldn't know the moisture level. They wouldn't know what the caliper is. They wouldn't know what the cut is. They wouldn't know what the embossing depth should be. There's a dozen different elements that go into making a card, and these people that are making their cards, they have no idea what that is. I had to sign a 13-page non-disclosure agreement before I start working for it. So people that are making claims on things, they don't know what they're talking about.
Well, I guess it's kind of like counterfeiting bills. There's a lot that goes into the rag content and the color and the ink and the design and the thread count and everything.
Exactly. Good analogy.
Yeah, I hear some cars shuffling here in the background.
Well, and yours are mine. This is mine.
So 16 hours a day that you're always practicing all the time. I know whenever...
Actually, that was a little bit of an exaggeration. My average day was 14 hours.
Oh, sorry. Don't want to push it too far there. You got to sleep sometime, I guess, don't you?
One of the things,
Richard, that you didn't talk about that was in the movie that I think people might be interested in also is the book that you'd released. You sent me a copy this many years ago, and it's phenomenal. It was a science fiction time traveler. Can you tell people about the book? And I think some of the, not just magicians, but the film club here would be interested in knowing a little bit about that, too.
Oh, it was just a novel I wrote that people kept trying to write a book about my life. And I also had a couple other offers to do a movie on my life back in the late 80s and early 90s. I didn't want to do it, so my way of copping out was writing a book kind of about my life with fantasy. So it's a time travel thriller, whatever, where guy goes back in time to play cards, to try to win money to get back a ranch that was lost in the game. But it was actually based on a story back in 1889, both in Santa Fe, New Mexico, there was a showdown between Ike Jackson and, Anyway, and they decided to play a no-limit show poker championship in the West. And what happened was they each came in with $100,000, and finally they drew hands. They're both proud of it. Within a matter of minutes, all the money was on the table, $200,000. And Ike Jackson, John Doherty and Ike Jackson. And so Ike Jackson didn't have money to raise a call, so he wrote out a deed for his ranch and for 10,000 head of cattle, and he said, "I raise you $100,000. Now Doherty, he didn't have money to raise a call, but he wasn't about to lose his hand, so there took place at Bowman Spoon, Santa Fe, New Mexico. And the governor was named L. Bradford Prince. And he said, "Governor, come over here." Ike Jackson got a deed for his ranch and threw it in there and said, "I raised you $100,000. Then Doherty took a piece of paper, wrote something up, told the governor to come over, pulled the gun, put it up to the governor's head, and said, "Sign this or I'll kill you. I like you, not like you, but I like your reputation as a poker player better than I do you or anyone else. Sign or die." Well, the governor did not read what he wrote, but don't you vote. Sucked it. Doherty threw it in the pot and said, "I raise you the entire territory of New Mexico." And there's the deed signed by the governor. It's the biggest raise ever risked on a poker game. And my book, what I did is I thought, what would happen if the governor of Texas happened to show up and call the feds up?
That's good. That's great. That's a true story.
Yeah, that's what the part I just told you is a true story.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, what was interesting, I think, further, that in the book, that there was something kind of related to something that was in the movie, and that is, as I recall, that the bad guys, the outlaws, had tied you up and had burned out your eyes through the sun. And I remember that in the movie that you were a child and you were at one point took a magnifying glass and said, "You want to burn these eyes out of my head." Was that right?
That is true. Yeah. That is true, and that I did. It was after a rebellion, and because I was a pretty good artist, starting at 5 years old, I got a lot of attention for my artistic talent. And then when the vision started going south, I was no longer able to paint and draw. So out of an act of rebellion against my family and God and everybody else, I just tried to burn it out of my head.
But that was something that was in the book also, is that right?
Yeah, that was in the book too, yeah.
Right, so it was kind of a little bit of an autobiography in parts, I guess.
That's what I said. All the incidences that take place in the book are based on actual things that took place in my life, other than the time travel element.
Right. That hasn't happened yet, but it just might.
That hasn't happened yet.
That's right. Now, whenever that you're practicing cards and you're going through a lot of the stuff to begin with and learning all of this, what would you say were the first few things? I mean, was it the double, or not the double, but just the second deals? What was the first thing, and what progression, I guess, did you go through to when you were learning these card slides?
Well, it depends on which era, because I started as a little kid.
Yeah.
Started at 7 years old, 8 years old, 9 years old. We played a lot of poker. and I was the oldest in my family, and we were very poor. We played for M&Ms. And the red ones were the most valuable, and the brown ones were the least valuable. And what I would do is I learned that if I had one more card in my hand, I won 20% of the time more often. So that was one of the first things that I did, was play extra cards and get rid of them during the discard. And so that I got through high school based on that type of, those type of manipulations. And then I also had an old lady named Mrs. Smith read parts of a book called Expert at the Card Table on some how to do some certain false shuffles, overhand false shuffles, second deal, bottom deal, and so that gave me an idea on what to do there. And then I would see John Scarney on, you know, on beer commercials and stuff back in the 60s. And I'd see him on, I can't remember, some talk show, it's Mike that show something talking about his two card push off second, how it took him so many years, and I didn't really know what he was doing, but I started analyzing it, and so that was from zero to my teens. And then when I was 21, I could do some pretty good work, and that's when I got to meet Ty Fernan, was 1975. And he took a liking to me, and I had the privilege of spending 17 with him, and I became the recipient of a century of his most guarded card table artifice, which is the most closely guarded of all magic informations that work for the card table.
Right, yeah, I understand that there is a documentary they're working on now that perhaps sometime in the future might be want to show this once it gets done, that's going to be about the book of Erdenes called Who Was Erdenes, I believe. So,
wouldn't be surprising. How many books have been done about Erdenes? Well, never ends.
That's true. We've got Charlie Randall out in the audience over here with H&R Magic.
Hey, Charlie!
And so I know that he's been involved, of course, his partner Richard Hatch has...
I've known Charlie for a long time.
Yep. Well, now also that speaking of the Erdenes books, and of course with Vernon, that behind you is a picture that's an iconic picture of you and Vernon at your wedding. Now, you didn't talk about that, but Di Vernon was best man at your wedding. Is that right?
That is true. That is true.
Yeah. Can you move out of the way just a hair a little bit so you kind of see that picture? Yeah. There you go. Thank you. Yeah, you can see Vernon in his top hat back over there.
and that one is a print. The original's downstairs. The original's a 30x40 portrait. That one there, I hosted a get-together with Steve Forty about a dozen of the top cardmen in L.A., and we all got a picture signed. It. It's also signed by Vernon on there.
Right, yeah.
Vernon was my best man, and MGM Movie Studios dressed him for the wedding. And I know you can't really see us probably too far, but his cane has DV on it for David Vernon, Di Vernon, and there's a couple of inconsistencies in the painting. Like there's, he has a card in the sleeve, he's cheating. I have a card peeking out my vest, I'm cheating.
Yeah, that's funny. Now, in San Antonio, where you are right now, and you were working at the saloon, you and your son, Ace of Spades, and are you still doing anything at the saloon over there, or?
The saloon is 38,000 square feet. It's a very large place, and very, very, pretty amazing. But when they have corporate events, it's not open to the public during the evening, which you think that would be the biggest time for tourists, since it's right downtown San Antonio, but it's closed because big corporations lease it out.
Right.
For those corporations.
Right, okay. And in doing that, I assume that you always stay at the table and they come to you as far as instead of strolling around.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
That is.
In making the film, going back again to Delt, that looked like that was filmed over about a two-year period or so, roughly?
No, in the film, there's one scene where Ace is going off to college.
Did he go to A&M? Where'd he go?
He went to Trinity, and he's graduating in a semester. So the movie just came out and he's just going off. It's all together 5 years, 5 years.
Okay.
3.5 years in production and about a year and a half production.
I'm sorry, and post-production was how long?
About almost 2 years.
Okay, wow, before it finally came out.
Yeah, yeah, they had 1,000 hours of footage, and they had 6,000 hours just preparing the 1,000 hours of footage in editing time by the tertiary editors for the secondary and primary editors. Mm-hmm. Then the ones that got it in, it was another almost 2 years in that one.
Wow, quite a few people were involved with all this. People.
Oh, yeah, well, you saw the credits, and, yeah, crafts and that. But there was a core of about a dozen people with the cameraman and sound man and director and producers and so on.
What was one of the most difficult? What was one of the most difficult parts of filming that?
None of it was really difficult. I didn't have to do. It was difficult for them. I just had to stand in front of the camera and act stupid.
All right. I want to have some questions also from the audience. John, there's people out there you want to raise your hand over there. We got Mark Holsing.
Hi, Richard. It's Mark and Sue from Abbott's. How are you?
Hey, Mark.
And Crazy Dave Elliott says hi.
Oh, yes, yes. And we ran into each other a couple times in the past 4, 6, 5 months.
We sure did.
Also, you were also in Vegas too, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's Magic 5.
We love the movie. I guess my question is, it was obviously a very personal movie, and I'm wondering if it was emotionally difficult for you to do this.
Well, I didn't know what they were going to do to me. like I said, they had 1,000 hours of footage. They had tons of studio asking everything about my life, and the way I figure now is I'm old. I don't care what people say about me. If they want whatever, and if it encourages people, it inspires people, I tell get over it, say it, share it. There you have it.
Thank you.
Another question back there? Anybody? Somebody? Oh, there we have another question over the corner over there. Hold on just a moment.
I am not a magician. I have no idea how to play cards, so this is all very amazing to watch. My friend and I, we're lovers of the cinema, and come out here to Alamo Draft House. We saw the preview for your documentary, and we're just kind of blown away by it. It looked awesome. It was an amazing story. I'd just like to thank you for sharing your experiences in life and everything that you shared with us. It was great. It was amazing. And this is coming from somebody who has no idea about the Houston scene with Magic or the Texas Magic scene, but it sounds like you have a lot of supporters here. And I just want to thank you for sharing it with us.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you. Let me ask Charlie a question.
All right, shoot.
Charlie, what's it like without Richard anymore?
It's great.
Is he freezing to death?
Let's hope so.
He's up in Salt Lake City, for those of you guys who don't
know. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little bit colder up there than it is down here, except maybe today.
Are you sure?
Yeah, maybe not today. That's true. It's quite. Well, it really has been an not just interesting, but just a very impressive and inspirational movie and documentary. It was well filmed and had emotional highs and lows and everything I think that that moviegoers want to see and are inspired by. We attend documentaries and these indies in order to kind of see and support the independent filmmaker as well, and to learn more about certain niches of our society. And I think here that not only have the people who are not magicians learned more about magic and magicians and what people go through and the commitment of time in order to achieve excellence, but also have just learned how that you have, I hate to say overcome, but you have become a person because of the commitment that you had. You said at the end of the movie that you wouldn't be where you are and what you have if it hadn't been for what you've overcome. Yes. So anyhow, I just, on behalf of everybody, you guys agree? I mean, has this been just amazing?
Let me ask one more question on my end. How many people covered their eyes during the eyeball scene?
A lot of hands raised here, yeah. Two, yeah. Well, you know, you've gone and had a few of these already, so a question I also have then, Richard, we start to wrap up here, is about what question that perhaps hasn't been asked that others have asked that might be kind of insightful.
Oh, you're asking somebody who's suffering from cedar fever right now.
Oh, no.
You guys have cedar in Santa and Houston?
Yeah.
Yeah, not like
you do there, but yeah, I can understand. No, I just want to make sure I got everything covered. And there might be something perhaps that you would like to share with us that I may have overlooked.
The DVD comes out on Valentine's Day.
Oh, perfect. And where can people probably
it hits Hulu 2 months later in April, and they're working on a worldwide international distributor. Distributorship for the film, so that's all in progress. But the DVD will be available on Valentine's Day.
And where do they go to get that?
In the stores.
Okay, so it's not necessarily just like Delt.com or something having a website. You can actually
that would be one place.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it'll be with IFC Sundance is the distributor. They're a big national distributor, and so they have their outlets that don't put.
Okay, great. Any other questions before we start to? Yeah, I see two more in the back over there. All of a sudden, we got some other things coming up. So if you'll hold on just a minute, we've got my runner going back over here. Yes, sir.
Hi, Richard. I am not part of the magicians, but we come to film club every year. We have our every week since April. I loved your story. It's amazing. And I was watching your hands. Do you do like extra weights or exercises or something with those fingers? Because I can't do anything with my left hand. I'm very impressed by your dual abilities there with your hands.
Is she talking about my being able to do right-handed and left-handed?
Yes.
Right, yes. Well, finger exercises, or what do you do perhaps with your hands? I mean, she has just some issues with her fingers, and are there some hand exercise you recommend?
Yeah, I've had 7 hand surgeries from all my years of fighting, so I had to retrain my hands, and I use finger spelling, sign language, and I would use the right hand to retrain my left hand by doing like a reflection therapy. I would just move both hands the same way, spelling different sign language letters. And that was one of the ways that I would keep my hands or get my hands back in shape. But then at the same time, I will practice with one hand. Are the cards showing up on the screen there?
Hold them up a little bit higher. No, or else, yeah. There you go, yeah.
Oh, so that means my chair's been way low.
Yeah, well, or else I need to tilt the camera, the monitor a little bit down a little bit. There you go. Now we see it. Perfect. That's great.
Okay.
Would you?
And then I had exercises that I created back in the 70s on how to teach one hand to do what the other hand already learned. And I stumbled on it by accident. I'm holding the hand of a girl, and with my other hand, I'm doing a one-hand shift. And all of a sudden, I go, hold it. This hand does not know how to do that. And I played a lot of poker back then, and the other players would not let me anywhere near the deck during the game. So, go figure. So, to burn off my nervous energy, I started rolling my poker chips or coins around the knuckles, and I got where I broke the world's record 4 times. The world record at the time was 4 coins around the knuckles with one hand. like 5, 7, 8 coins on one hand. And how I did that was I would first decide which hand feels more inclined to do it. And if it was the right, I'd start with the left. And say I'm up to 3 coins. And I might practice there 14 hours. And then I would throw the coins in my right hand. And this is what I do. I would just save my left hand by sitting on it. And then I'd start practicing. Ask my brain to start practicing. And because the left hand was disabled, the right hand was tricked into tapping into the neural network where the muscle memory was already stored. And within 20 to 30 minutes, my right hand would catch up with the left hand. And so then I'd go back over four coins for 14 hours, 4 coins for 30, 5 coins for 14 hours, 5 coins for 30 minutes. And I did all that in a 1 month period of time. And see, it's like, you know, here's a one-hand shift with the right hand and a one-hand shift with the left hand, a one-hand shuffle, slower than one-hand shuffle, one-hand shuffle, right hand, one-hand shuffle, with the left hand, want to fan the cards with the right hand, and same thing, fan the cards with the left hand. So I used my brain to teach one hand to do what the other hand already learned, and these techniques are now being used by the medical community to help rehabilitate amputees from a military battle. What they do is they put a mirror, like the guy had his leg amputated, put a mirror in there, and the guy will see 2 legs. And anyway, that's another story. But anyway, the same thing I stumbled onto are now being used by the medical community.
Would you consider yourself to be right-handed, left-handed, or ambidextrous?
Pretty much ambidextrous. I was working with Paul, good friend Paul, Paul Gertner,
sure.
And he was telling me, oh, do this on this one. And I said, well, I was doing it with this hand. And I said, okay, well, I can just flip it, you know, reverse it, you know, right on the spot.
Yeah. I think we have another question back there also, John. There's somebody out their hand up.
Actually, I have 2 quick questions. The first question is, the teacher that did the 7-inch reel work, was she ever able to see the success that you became? Were you ever able to reconnect with her? And then the second question is, what's next? I mean, you've done so much just in this documentary, and I'm sure there's more, but what's the next challenge that you set for yourself?
Yeah, great question.
Well, Mrs. Smith, she was, when I knew her, I thought she was about 120 years old. I was, 11 years old at the time, and so she, you know, she was just an old, wrinkled up, very sweet lady. So after I left June 5, it's the last I saw of her, but Ed Bryan was the one that actually ran the VH department, and he taught me simple magic tricks back then, like cutting a store, a piece of rope, or nickels and dimes, you know, those little tricks like that. And but he followed all the way up to his death. He was with me, watched me at the Magic Castle 45 years later.
Wow.
He died about 40 years ago. But Mrs. Smith was just a volunteer for him. She's the one that had that big old 7-inch reel, let me borrow it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and what's next?
Yes.
I always say, when I was 38 years old, I said, I've already had more than my fair share. I've already had cherry on top of chair, top of chair. I know one thing they're talking about is turning the story into a narrative. If anything happens, that would probably be the next thing that happens. Turn it into a feature film.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
We have another question over there. Yes.
Yes, I'm curious how much of your time you spend performing professionally these days. It seems like you have a lot going on.
Performing for what?
Professionally.
I do a lot of speaking and performing, and I actually perform 5 to 7 days a week, 27 years straight. I had one run. My last run was 440 days in a row. And then my run, well, I had one run that was 2,190 days in a row. But now I kind of pick and choose. Like, I'm going to be the keynote speaker for Lockheed Martin in a couple weeks. And I'm literally hopping from one plane, get off, change underwear, hop a plane to Vegas, hop, come back home, change underwear, go back to Vegas, come home, hop a plane to London, come home, hop a plane to L.A., hop a plane to L.A. again, hop a plane back to San Antonio, hop a plane to Oklahoma. And that's just what's going on in the next few, couple weeks.
Has Kim or Asa been traveling with you?
Oh, yeah. Asa's been all over the world. Last year we did Japan together, and Kim and I did, and my wife, we did Portugal. I did Luis Modis' show, Impossível.
Yeah.
That was really fun. And then we're going to, I'm performing in St. Vincent, Italy. And I told him, if you want me, you have to pay expenses for four this time. So Asa, his girlfriend, my wife, and I were all going for a couple weeks to Italy. Now, I'll perform for like 3 days, and then we vacation for weeks.
Have they talked to you about going to South Korea for the FISM this year?
Somebody was, but I kind of ignored it.
Now, is Kim your agent, or do you have another outside agent who books you for all these?
We have different management companies that contact, but she does a better job than anybody. She knows how to deal with people, and so she's the dealer. She's the wheeler dealer.
Yeah, right. Other questions? Yep, have another one over here. You wait just a moment.
Hi, Richard. I'm not a magician, but one of the most inspiring parts of this documentary was your work with the children at, I would assume, a school for the blind there in San Antonio. I do quite a bit of volunteer work here in Houston, and one of the things I find is I often learn more from the people I'm working with than they probably learn from me. So how do these kids inspire you?
You know, at first I didn't, well, way back when I used to say, I didn't want any kids. If I ever had twins, I'd sell one and give the other away. But then I had a guy named General McDermott, who was the CEO of USAA, and he built a place here in San Antonio called Fiesta Texas, which when it opened in 92, was a live theme park based on live entertainment. And he said, you know, would you consider going in and speaking to the kids about making good choices? And so we did that. We spoke to about 150,000 students over the course of a period of time. And I got where I really enjoy kids. And then I had a guy who's one of the biggest developers in San Antonio, D.B. Harrell. He asked if I would teach a class at the San Antonio Academy where you saw some of that filming take place. And I said, well, as long as my son Asa can be with me, because I'd be father-son thing a couple of weeks out of the summer. And we've been there for 14 years now. And that young, girl in there, Michaela, remember her?
Yeah. Right, yes.
Yeah, we just had dinner with her and her family at their home this last Saturday.
Wow. Nice.
And she's 5'11".
A tall young girl.
She's a tall, beautiful girl.
Yes, she is. One of the things that was not discussed in the movie, but the fact that your sister also has the same loss of sight, is that something that's been genetic in your on your line? I mean, your uncles or anyone else in your family, or was that something you just hit?
That was something that just hit. Huh. They didn't know if it was genetic or not. She's had four kids. And then a dozen grandkids, and nobody has had any issue, and we have just the one son, no issue. But the one commonality between my sister and I is we both got scarlet fever, and it was right shortly after the scarlet fever that our vision both went south on us.
Yeah.
So we think that may have been the cause, but we can't say for sure, because back in 63, they just didn't have the technology and understanding of things that they do now, or were able to diagnose and so on.
Sure. Well, listen, we're going to have to wrap up, and I know some of us have to get home and try to fight the ice as well.
Oh,
to get
back home.
Listen, yes, thank you very much for joining us, and on behalf of the rest of the group over here, I'm going to let them thank you with their applause.
You can send notes to, you can write a review on Amazon or whatever and let Luke and them know what a great job. They're the ones that did all the heavy lifting, like I said.
Yeah, you just stood in front of the camera and acted stupid.
like when I was wearing my wife's dress and she was so worried.
That was great. Well, you were inspirational, and we appreciate it a lot, and it's always good to have a chance to chat with you. And so, again, thanks again. We appreciate it.
Thanks, you guys. Bye now.
Okay, we'll see you. Bye, Richard. Bye. Well, I'd certainly like to thank Richard Turner for being my guest this week on the Magic Word Podcast. Even though that we weren't together, we were kind of in a Skype togetherness, if you will. It was a little bit different kind of a discussion that we had here. So first time for that. And it was a lot of fun. I want to thank Richard again for working and making this film. And of course, Luke Corum and all the rest of the guys who were involved. A couple of comments, by the way, about the podcast that you just heard. One is, I think I'd mentioned about Luke's father, Danny Corum, not being so involved in magic. Actually, it's just that he hasn't been involved of late. He's been very involved in someone who is very instrumental in some of the history of magic, certainly, and someone that if you don't know who Danny Corum is, that's K-O-R-E-M. You should certainly look him up, and he's got a book that is one of my favorite books that's in my 5-foot library. You know, if you're going to have 5 feet of books, then this is one of them. It's an excellent book. I think Corum Without Limits, I believe, is the name of the book. Also, there was a in the podcast mention in which that Richard had talked to or mentioned or did a shout out there to Charlie Randall and said, "Hey, Charlie, what do you think about no longer being together with Dick Hatch?" And he said, "Oh, it's great." I want to make sure, I guess, that everyone who's listening to this knows that that was just tongue-in-cheek and he was just being sarcastic. Obviously, that Charlie Randall and Richard Hatch are best friends and they remain this way. And Richard knew that and he took that as being the joke or the sarcasm really that it was. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, well, that was kind of rude for Charlie to say that. No, actually, that they're good friends. Everything is fine. So don't worry about that. Well, I think this week we have some time to do a few reviews from products that are available from your favorite magic dealer that come to us from Murphy's Magic Supplies, and I would like to bring a few of these to your attention and for your consideration. First up this week, I think it's kind of interesting since we do have one of the best card magicians in the entire world, or I should say card mechanics, in Richard Turner, and what he does is the real difficult, the real stuff, you know, with cards. But I would want to recommend a DVD that comes to us from Big Blind Media, and I've always loved their presentation and their videos. They do a great job in their production, and as well as the location and the filming, so this way you see everything. Anyhow, the name of this DVD is called Sublime Self-Working Card Tricks by John Carey. It's not to be confused with John Carney. There's no N in this. It's John Carey, C-A-R-E-Y. And these have 10 tricks that are all self-working and something you can do with a shuffle deck. And in fact, there are a couple of coin tricks as well that are entertaining. And all of these are things that you can do without gimmicks. Now, of course, the coin trick, there is a gimmick involved, but I'm not going to get into that or expose that. But I do want to say that this is something that is definitely for the beginner. But let me say that in John's hands, and I believe in yours as well, you can make the presentation of these essentially very simple tricks into what appears to be some mighty miracles. Certainly his volunteers have great exclamations, and they enjoyed it a lot. But I will say it was not in a real-life situation. It was a contrived area. These, again, are fairly simple. They're not counting tricks, but they necessarily, there are a few of them in which you're counting down some cards and you're adding, it has one idea with some dice, has three dice that you would roll, and then you would count down to a card that is matching a prediction. So there are some things that have to do with some predictions, and they might have a little bit of a setup as far as knowing where some cards are. I've worked on a few of these things. I say worked, I've presented a couple of these things, because after you watch it once, it doesn't take a lot of practice necessarily as far as the handling of it. It's just a matter of presentation. And so I worked out a couple of different presentations on a couple of these things and had presented them and have gotten a really good reaction. Now, I wouldn't say that they are an opener nor a closer, but they're certainly something. If someone says, hey, here's a deck of cards, can you do something? You probably have your own favorite card trick. But if you don't, I think that you'll find something in this DVD that you would use as one of your favorite go-to impromptu types of tricks with a shuffle deck, because again, it could be a borrowed deck, shuffle deck, and I would say that of the 10 tricks, probably at least half of them are things that are just that. They're not going to be a stack deck or have a certain card at a certain location, or, you know, one of them, again, requires some dice, another one coins. And so if we take those out, you still have about five or six that are actually improvisational types of tricks. So anyhow, this is a DVD that I'd recommend. I think you should download the At the Table lecture for John Kerry, because it goes into a lot more detail and some other things, certainly. But I would recommend this DVD. Again, it's called Sublime Self-Working Card Tricks by John Kerry. Next up, from Sans Minds and the mind of Ben Howard, is Snag. Now, because it's Sans Minds, in my opinion, that means there's going to be a little bit of angle problems. That is, there are going to be some places perhaps it's best that your audience is not going to be standing in order to get the instructional view. This is one in which there are minimal angles, actually, that you have to worry about, and they go into some detail about that, so that's not going to be an issue. The effect is basically where that you borrow a ring, it vanishes, and then you reach inside your shirt, your button shirt, and show that their ring is actually attached to a chain around your neck. You then reach behind your neck, and you would take off the chain, you would unbutton it, or unclasp it, and then you pull, you with your hands or fingers still holding on then to the ring that is on the chain, they pull that off, and you hand that to them, and that is on the middle of that chain. It's just that clean, and I think this is a pretty cool thing. Now, there are some things involved with this in which you're going to have to gimmick your shirt. Now, again, you have to use a buttoned shirt, a button-down shirt. It's going to be open at the collar, and there are some magnets involved, let me just say that without going into any detail, but it's something that, gosh, yeah, if you're doing that and you're getting ready to do it, there might be, you want to make sure that the magnet is where it's supposed to be and everything is ready to go before that you borrow the ring, because you don't want to do that and you'll end up having to do something else. Anyhow, along with the DVD that you get the necessary something that you need, that is the magnets, I guess, and some other things that to make this work, as well as the chain. Now, personally, I'm not a person who wears a lot of jewelry. Aside from my watch and ring, I don't wear a neck chain or anything like that. It's a thin chain. It's a manly thing. A woman could wear it as well. And it's something, if you have your own chain, you could probably incorporate that also, depending upon the thickness of your chain. And so this is a fairly thin one. In fact, I would recommend that if you go to the video of this to see the presentation of it, you'll see the kind of chain that they're using. If you have a chain that's about that same size, then you could, again, perhaps use your own neck chain. And it is a pretty cool trick from the standpoint, again, that it is a borrowed ring. It vanishes, reappears on your chain, and you pull this out between the buttons in your shirt, and or you can even have them do it. In fact, that is something that they talk about, how that you can control it. They hang onto the ring, and then you pull the chain out, and sure enough, that as they're seeing it, that is on the middle of that chain that you just unclasped from the back of, quote, unclasped from the back of your neck. It is a pretty cool idea. I like this. I think that Ben Howard's got a winner here, and it's something that I would recommend, not necessarily something that I would use. You can repeat this, certainly. It's not something that is easily resettable. From the standpoint, you're going to have to go to another room and kind of get ready to perform it then again, so it's not like what I could do like when I'm working in cocktails, strolling, sleight of hand type of an environment. It is a one-off kind of a thing that you could do at a bar or for some people, a group of friends or something that's kind of in an impromptu situation. If you happen to be out to dinner or something, perhaps you can then do this, and they say, hey, can you do some magic? This might be the thing that would cap the evening. I mean, this really could be a closing trick. It's certainly one that people will talk about because their borrowed ring ends up on attached to your chain. Pretty cool. Again, I recommend it by Sans Minds. It's called Snag by Ben Howard. Our third and final review is for a book called Calculated Risk by Michael Murray. This is a paperback booklet of about 52 pages, well, exactly 52 pages, just like a deck of cards, except there are no card tricks. These are all phone tricks. Specifically, it's called Calculated Risk because you are using the calculator function on certain iPhones of your volunteers in order to discern their passcode. There are, again, several different ideas that are included here, some bonus effects, a total of about 10 presentations to be used in here. Again, all predictions in which you're going to be able to tell how to the passcode is for their phone and for a friend's phone, which is kind of cool. Also, perhaps their birth dates, anything basically that can kind of come down to numbers. You can do astrological signs, et cetera, et cetera. There's one trick in here then also that has to do, that's really more of a trick, more of a magic trick as opposed to a mind reading effect. There is one trick that is cleverly hidden inside the confines of this book that's called Noted, and this does not have to do with the calculator, but actually has to do with the note function of the iPhone. Again, I'm not an iPhone user, but as I read through this, it seems to be very clever, where you can actually discern a word that is written on a notepad, or the notepad feature of the iPhone, and you can use this, as they kind of suggest in passing, as your pre-show work. If I had an iPhone, I think I would seriously consider using that. It's a very clever idea that they've got. Again, that's called Noted, and it uses a similar kind of handling of the phone surreptitiously when you're pushing buttons that they shouldn't see you. But again, if you're using this in pre-show, you'll be able to do this after they've already put in their words and you have supposedly already erased those words. I should also point out that although this is a book, there are links to videos that you can watch online where you can see presentations of exactly what the effect is supposed to look like that they're talking about in the book. I will also say that my reservation for a high recommendation on this is that it is to be used only with iPhones. I am an Android user, so this doesn't work for me, and I don't have an iPhone, so I can't fiddle around with this to make this work or to practice with this. So this is not something that I can say that I would heartily recommend because I hardly haven't worked with it. I haven't really, other than reading through it, and I understand the effect, I understand how it can be used. I would like to borrow some friend's phone and play with this sometime so I can do this because it is an impromptu trick that you can do out with friends when a cocktail situation. It's a very much an impromptu kind of a thing, and again, some very good effects. Not only, though, is it just for iPhones, but there are certain models, and I know the iPhone is always making changes each year and upgrading, and so it goes into some detail saying, well, it works for this iPhone generation or greater, so or at least the current model or whatever, and so it could be that this suggested method might be outdated at some time in the future whenever that they change to some other types of iPhones. It is really good for now for some phones in some models of iPhones. So again, this is kind of a limited thing, although the majority of the world does use an iPhone, and I'm kind of in the minority perhaps using Android. Let me rephrase that. Actually, in the world, there are more Android users than there are iPhone users, but just the reverse is true in the United States. There are more people in the United States who use iPhones than use Android, but when you consider the rest of the world, you know, the iPhones really are in a minority if you do a search. And I have, if you do a Google. And, you know, you got to believe it because it's on the internet. Anyhow, it is it also has some good bonus routine suggestions by some of his friends who wrote some other mentalists. And again, it's recommended with some reservation for iPhone users. And it's called Calculated Risk by Michael Murray. So that wraps up three for Thursday, and these are all available through Murphy's Magic Supplies, which you can purchase from your favorite magic dealer, like the Magic Word Podcast. Just go to themagicwordpodcast.com, and over on the left-hand side, you'll see the tab that will say Magic Store. Click on that, and you can see all the things that are available, and if you don't see it, I'm sure we can get it. Just let me know. Drop me an email to scott@themagicwordpodcast.com, and I'd be glad to add a button on there so this way that you can help support the Magic Word. Well, thank you guys very much for staying until the end of this podcast. And for those of you who have listened this far, I have a special announcement for you. I am offering a free deck of playing cards from the movie Dealt. This is a promotional deck of cards that was given out to the people who were at the screening of the movie. Actually, they had sent these to me, and I distributed them later to the magicians who were in attendance. But I have a deck of cards that I've put aside, and I'll be glad to send you a deck of these cards if you are the lucky winner. All you have to do is go to themagicwordpodcast.com, and if you will enter the contest there, you'll see at the bottom of the blog, there is a place where that you can put in your name and email address, and I will draw a random name in the future, and I will announce that name, and then if you live in the United States, domestic shipping is free. If you live outside the U.S., then I'll calculate what the foreign shipping is going to cost, and that if you're willing to pay that and reimburse me for that foreign shipping, then I'll send you that deck of cards. And let me say, again, this is a special promotional deck of cards that has a picture, a drawing of Richard Turner on the front of every card, and of course on the outside of the pack as well, of him as a gambler in his younger days and holding a deck of cards. And if you go to the website again, you'll see a picture of what the cards actually look like. I will also say this is not a deck of cards that was made by the U.S. Playing Card Company. It's not a very good quality of cards, so you may not want to open it up and play with them. You'll probably want to put them up anyhow, since it is a collector's deck and it was especially made for this movie. So if you'll just go to themagicwordpodcast.com, go to the bottom of this particular blog, and then enter the contest, and you may be the lucky random winner. So good luck. And so that wraps up another podcast. We thank you guys very much for sticking around and for listening to us this long. And also, I want to thank all of you who are the financial supporters of the Magic Word Podcast. And you can become a friend of the Magic Word if you, again, will go to the Magic Word Podcast, and you'll see a tab over there that say Become a Friend. And you can click on that, find out all the information about how that you can donate on a one-time basis, or you can pledge monthly if you wish. All that I'm asking for is a cup of coffee a month. You know, doesn't take very much, but every little bit helps. Any amount will be appreciated, whether it's a one-time or an ongoing pledge. And I want to thank all those who have supported in the past in order to help keep this podcast going. So until next time, stay well, get booked, and regardless what life gives you, you got to play the hand that's dealt. This is Scotty out.